everybody. I'm Dan Abern. He's Kyle Devitt. This is the In the Crease podcast, and we are post-championship weekend. Kyle, we have our champion. Congratulations to the Virginia Cavaliers on capturing the 2019 national championship with an impressive 13-9 victory over Yale. It was the culmination of a fantastic 2019 college lacrosse season that was truly a pleasure to cover. Thank you all.
I know that we probably say this a lot, but best ever? That kind of feels like best ever.
We say right? That every year. I mean, yeah. I don't know if it was the best ever Final Four. There's been quite a few memorable Final Fours that I've attended, but you know, it was fun. And I definitely think that overall, this is one of the more memorable tournaments from start to finish that I've ever been a part of. So maybe this is the best ever whole NCAA tournament, especially if you consider some of the outstanding games we had in the quarterfinal round.
Yeah, not a ton of upsets. Usually you want a really big one there, but didn't get that. I don't know if that makes the tournament itself better or if it just makes, you know, for one good game or one good talkable result. But yeah, I was really impressed with a lot of teams, all these teams had to develop to the shot clock, a new clearing clock. I mean, hats off. It probably was the hardest all these coaches worked like in their careers just to game plan. So the fact that that happened and we still got these great games, there wasn't a inordinate amount of like 30-0 blowouts in Division One. So I feel like everybody did a great job, and I'm really psyched for next year. But I'm at the same time, I'm pretty pumped for this to be over. Pretty pumped. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, it's a weird day because the day after Memorial Day is always like you're relieved that a lot of the work is done, but also there's a feeling of just like, wow, like it's all over. So it's a weird day. Let's talk about this season, this past weekend, though. Before we talk about the national championship, let's dive into the semifinal round. Starting first with Virginia's 13-12 double overtime victory over Duke. And what was yet another wild comeback for Virginia here, rallying two goals in the final minute of play to tie it, and then Ian Laviano in double overtime winning it for the Cavaliers. They made huge plays in the overtime periods to escape with this win, truly the epitome of their season in snatching a victory out of the jaws of defeat.
Yeah, I think that, you know, looking back, especially at that game, maybe like too exciting almost at points. You know, I think the Virginia
impossible, Kyle.
Yeah, no, this not possible. It is possible. The two Virginia guys, SIDs, were behind us during that game, and they were just excitedly talking, and I couldn't hear anything because I was just sitting there going, they're going to do this. They're going to come all the way back on this Duke team. And when they did, it was almost like a feeling of inevitability to it, especially with, and I said this at the time, I maintain it, the low to high. He's on the crease, but like the low to high rip, high crease from Laviano, top shelf right under the bar, is maybe one of the greatest low to high shots, pressure shots that I've ever seen. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's just perfect execution. That's what Ian Laviano does, that signature low to high. But I think particularly where the feed came from, it swung the goalie so quickly. And when you give it to a guy who's so accustomed to pulling off that play, it was just like, it's like we watch these games almost as if they're in slow motion. It's like, as soon as you see him on the high crease, you're like, low to high, game is tied. Right. I mean, that's how I was like, oh, we're going to OT. Let's go. You know, I think there was a certain confidence among the members of the press, particularly within the inside lacrosse group, that Virginia was going to find a way to rally. But I wasn't sure if they were going to win.
Yeah, no, I think I'm trying to remember. I think the Conrad goal where he split two and fired it over is the one that made me like believe. And I was like, well, okay, they're actually doing it. And then they did it. And even when they did it, the finish is so again, I mean, I don't know, it's so casual in OT to like catch and shoot with like that, that level of like killer confidence is so rare with players in that moment. And the fact that it's just, it's so automatic just blew me away. Just blew the casualness of it. Just totally wrecked me as I was watching it. And I'm trying to write, you know, the tactical breakdowns and stuff, but like some tactics you can't break down, you know, some mentalities, some skills are not like, they don't make sense. You know, yeah. I think the closest person in other sports to that is probably like, you know, like Messi in soccer or like Steph Curry when he's hot in a game and he makes a shot and you're like, what? And he's just like, whatever. And like, come back down the court. You know, I think it was almost akin to that in terms of execution in the moment with what seemed like minimal effort, but isn't minimal effort. Do you know what I mean? I think that's yeah. one of the things that, that really stuck out to me.
Well, also, I just think the whole season, like, Ian Laviano just has kind of just accepted his role. He's like, guys are going to try to find me inside or on the right wing, and I have one job, and that's to put it into the back of the net. And, you know, we've had a lot of great goal scorers this year, like Mac O'Keefe, Matt Gaudette, Kevin Lindley. But, you know, Ian Laviano has always kind of been there as, like, one of the, like, prized finishers within this game. He's a little bit more of a kind of like a mid-range shooter than like an inside finisher, but still, like, just every time, like, it felt like they fed it to him, he was going to find the back of the net. And I think both the low to high equalizer and then pretty much almost as if it was like a quick stick to the offside while turning the goalie for the overtime winner was just like, it was just like, I knew it was going to happen. It's just like, you saw him feeding the crease. It's like, oh, they really did it. They really did it. They really won this.
Yeah. The thing that I found most interesting about this particular game was that both teams went in and out of zone a lot mm-hmm. to kind of like almost mess with each other. But I don't think it worked as well for, I mean, obviously it didn't work as well for Duke than Virginia, but early, I think that's how Duke got up on Virginia. But I mean, and we're going to get to the title game, but the Virginia defense that played against Duke, I can't believe it was the same one that played against Yale.
That's and fair.
We'll talk more about that when we get there, but they look like two different missions, two different, you know, squads. And even though they weren't at all.
Yeah. Let's move on and talk about the second semifinal. I think that this was the game out of both of them that I think most people were excited about, and it kind of didn't go the way we expected. Yale ended up beating Penn State 21-17. Football score. Thanks, shot clock. Obviously, a really surprising start here. Yale leading 10-2 after the first quarter. And you have to wonder if Penn State was ready for the immensity of the Final Four moment, having never been there before. Because Yale, fresh off a national championship win, certainly did look like they were ready for the moment. They got down to business right away, made a statement early. That being said, Penn State did rally. It got to 12-9 at half. And I remember watching the third quarter from the sideline, and Penn State was within striking distance, three or four goals for a good portion of the third quarter. But a decisive run in their favor was never rallied, and goals just started to fall a bit easier for Yale as faceoffs and possession time mounted against the Nittany Lions in that fourth quarter. I thought Grant Ament had a terrific game, especially if you watch the tape. But the optics of Penn State getting routed shrouds that a bit.
It's interesting you blend it on the shot clock. I don't. Because it's not like Yale used all of the shot clock to score 10 goals in the first quarter.
It's almost impossible. It's an easy scapegoat.
It is an easy scapegoat. That's why I'm not accepting it. It's I don't agree that it's because of the shot clock the score was like that. It's because of Yale's great game planning at the beginning of the game, and then Penn State finally adjusting, and they're just not, you know, in many ways I use the phrase like they ran out of time when a team loses a close game, because it's like a nice way of saying the team that lost, like maybe you won if there's five quarters in this game, but there isn't. I did feel that way a little bit here, but you can't get down on Yale for scoring 10 and in the first quarter and then bookending it with another big run the fourth to put Penn State away. Penn State, the best offense in the country, got outscored and the other team scored 21 goals.
Yeah.
I thought it was an incredible game just by virtue of that. The level of finishing that Yale had, you know, that didn't kind of, I don't want to say didn't show up, but wasn't as apparent in the first, in the final game against Virginia, was totally on display here. And it's because of their slash quick send the ball movement that did not work against Virginia, because Virginia didn't commit to close out and Penn State did. And that allowed Yale to bang the ball and get clean looks. Like, the thing about those first nine goals, especially, is the looks for the shooting lanes are so clean that you almost like can't blame the goalie for a bunch of those, because those dudes were shooting without a guy in their face. And at the D1 level, those should go in.
Yeah, you're right. The wide openness of some of those players in that first quarter was like, whoa, like Penn State is clearly shell shocked here. You know what? I just don't know. Like, I felt like a run was coming from Penn State. You know, we were saying in the press box the whole game, like, we know what has to happen here for Penn State to come back, and that they need to score four goals for every one goal that Yale scores. And of course, that doesn't seem far-fetched when you go back to the quarterfinal round and they happen to have like an 11-1 run against Loyola. And we kind of knew that that was possible, especially when Mac O'Keefe started to get a little bit hot, started getting to his left hand, doing his low to high action. And then, you know, Dylan Folds and a couple other guys got into the mix. But it just kind of felt like that Yale defense kind of clamped down in the third quarter and just prevented them from kind of making that decisive run. You also had TD Ireland just kind of having his way at the faceoff X as well, that just kind of never let Penn State back into the game. Ultimately kind of just ran out of the tank a little bit late in that third quarter. Yeah. Penn State though, considering all that they have coming back on offense next year, got to pencil them in, I think, as the preseason number one already. I'm going to say it right now.
I think we already know that the offense wasn't the problem, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry about that. I've been really nice so far. I just need to be mean for a second. I feel better.
Yeah. All right, Kyle. With that being all said, let's move on to Monday's title game. Virginia 13, Yale 9. Now, I know a ton of people were expecting a Yale victory in this game after that impressive dispatching of a great Penn State team in the semifinals, but it was a complete gritty performance from Virginia from start to finish. They played the exact game they needed to play, cut into the faceoff advantage, got a good performance in cage, defense played pretty well, found extra possessions off the ride, and scrapped for ground balls. They then turned to their Fab Five, and there were some noteworthy performances from Matt Moore, Docs Aiken, and Michael Krause. And of course, the flying meatball, Petey Lasala, had a massive game, cutting into TD Ireland's dominance, and turned two faceoff wins into two timely, much-needed juice goals for Virginia. I remember just at halftime, there was just like a shock that seemed to permeate throughout the press corps at Lincoln Financial Field. I was like, wow. Did we just see that half? It kind of felt like Virginia got such a perfect start, and then they kind of kept it up. And you were like, they played so well that I'm actually surprised that they're only up by as many goals as they were up by. And then in the third quarter, Yale strikes back a little bit early, but then they just kind of kept grinding, and they got it to 10-4, and that's when you're like, okay, this is going to happen for Virginia.
I don't disagree with any of those points. I will say, and I didn't see enough people, some people were talking about it, but that was the greatest defensive performance by a Virginia team defense, best team defense I can ever remember a Syracuse team playing, including that undefeated team and the team that Tillman Johnson was on. Because Tillman Johnson, like,
high praise.
Tillman Johnson's the reason you won that game, and you all know that. It wasn't the defenders, because those dudes were getting a lot of shots on you. So the way that Jared Connors was flying around the field.
Yeah, you know, he was outstanding.
he went down in the semifinal towards the end, and I thought that was really bad news for them, but I guess it was just cramps. So he's fine. He was fine. He definitely looked better than fine in the championship game. But it looked like a non-contact injury, but it was just a cramp. But I can't say enough about it. Alex Rode making the stops that, and listen, we've been critical of him and his performance going back to last year on the podcast. So the fact that he's kind of adjusted now and, you know, having Kip Turner as his assistant definitely developed him into a better goalie, and his work ethic has put him in a position where he could have a game like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's not like he hasn't had gaudy save totals, but it's not like people were talking about him as goalie of the year either. You know,
no.
I think a lot of other goalies were getting a lot more respect than him. And he was amazing, you know, coming across the cage to make that save. I think it was in the right before the half was like, they're going to win. I was just sitting there like, well, Yale can come back. You know, we've seen them score 10 goals in a quarter, but at the same time, I'm like, no, dude's making that save. He's not losing. And I don't want to like get too critical about Yale and what they did defensively, but I don't know how you live your life not putting a pull on Docs. Like,
yeah,
they're going to look back on that tape and be like, oh my God, he killed us, especially late. Like, I get like doing it and then like seeing it kind of work, but then when it doesn't work, you got to change that. And they didn't. And he scored two huge goals, in the second half.
Yeah. To speak to that, to both points. I think in the first half, especially, I think the length of Virginia's defenders kind of seemed to perplex that Yale offense. They were trying to get a little bit of separation, and just there they always were with a stick in their face. And I think that just kind of came, that just really was the tail of the tape in the first half, was like Yale shooters like weren't really like getting off great shots, but that's because that almost every shot was contested.
Yes.
You know, and that's complete something opposite. That didn't happen in the Penn State game.
Yeah, it's the complete opposite. It's not even close to the same thing. It's the actually the opposite of that.
So. And, you know, defensively for Yale, obviously the one goal that sticks out from Docs is where he takes, you know, the player from almost the midfield line and just isolates, roll back, and score. And, you know, it was not only that, but there was moments in the game where it's like Matt Moore had a short stick and, you know, Michael Krause had a short stick and they just feasted. And it's like, those are like the three guys you have to have a pull on, your best pull at every single moment. And it just
but again, that's the conundrum, right? Like, who do you not pull? And with the way Ryan Conrad was playing, you have to put a pull on him, put a pull on Docs, which means you got to short someone else.
Yeah.
Gun to my head, even though he just won the semifinal, I think I would short Laviano because he doesn't dodge.
Cause he's not going to dodge. And you know, you just got to tell your shorties to like, hey, just get on his hands. Don't let him get free.
Or don't leave him. Don't slide off him. You know, something like that. But again, hindsight is always 20/20. I'm sure that the playbook that they thought they were going to see from that Virginia defense was different than what Virginia did. And I think those guys played the game of their lives. And, you know, Coach Lars and Kerwin and Turner just, you know, they showed up in a way that I think people didn't expect, to be honest with you. So
it was clear in the ACC final against Notre Dame that, you know, Virginia was capable of a defensive performance like this, but to do it against a Yale team who in every single tournament game had scored 19 goals, like you said, just really impressive. And, you know, I thought Cade Saulstad in particular had the game of his life. He came up with some, I'm not even going to call them 50-50 ground balls. I'm going to call him 80-20 against his favor. And he came out with them. And I'm like, wow, this kid, only a freshman, is having the game of his life and the biggest game of his life so far. I think he had like 5 ground balls, pretty much collected every single Alex Rhodes save that he didn't garner cleanly. So, you know, shout out to him. There's so many things I want to kind of talk about, you know, from like a bigger picture perspective. Obviously, like, this national championship for Virginia is the culmination of some massive recruiting pickups, not necessarily by Lars, but by, you know, Dom Starger before He moved on from Virginia. You obviously had three number one midfielders on that roster in Matt Moore, Ryan Conrad, and Dox Aiken. But of course, I think one of the, it was like hindsight is 2020, but one of the more interesting moves that we'll kind of like talk about this entire season was moving Matt Moore to attack. And I remember in the preseason saying like, wow, that's interesting. And it resulted in a program single season points record being broken in this game. And I just thought throughout, I'm not going to lie. I'm really surprised that he was not named the tournament's most outstanding player. Because if you think about the overtime winner against Maryland, he had that. He had the game tying and game winning assist in the semifinal. And then he just had just unbelievably poignant, timely goals within this game that kind of just, once you saw that, you could kind of see that Virginia's energy just elevated so much. And yeah, that will ultimately be a move that Lars will look back on, Sean will look back on saying, yeah, we really made a good choice doing that.
Yeah. You know what stood out for me? I was listening to stuff that that Lars was saying afterward, and I think I always thought it would be fascinating what would happen if the general public was exposed to like Lars' philosophies away from lacrosse a little. Mm-hmm. And then that's exactly what happened after the game. Like, he's talking about books to read over the summer and how, like, you know, the idea of men not being emotional is like a toxic thought. And I'm just sitting there going like, man, people that don't know Lars are just sitting there going, what is happening? But I'm like, I was sitting there and I was like, I'm actually like really happy that I got to know this person, like, yeah, in lacrosse, because outside, yes, he won a national championship with his team. He coached this team. And you know, in many ways, this was also, I mean, I don't want to cheapen this for Virginia fans, but I want to give a little shout out to the Brown people, because in many ways, this was a 2016 Brown championship too. You know, in terms of philosophy, not the players at all, but like for those coaches, you know what I mean? Like that's
they were finally validated with, you know, pursuing that style of play.
Right. And the kind of opposite side of that is that Yale comes out of it kind of going, what happened? You know, because I think that, and listen, we've talked to Shea plenty of times on and off record, at least I have. And you know, he strikes me as someone that's always prepared, and something you can't prepare for a momentum strike like that or defense to play like that sometimes. And I think that's really what happened in this game. And, you know, for him and his squad, you know, they lose some guys, but they bring a lot back in terms of their offense for sure. So and their defense. So I think we're looking at two really, really excellent teams. It, for me, this game was a lot like the D3 game for me, where I like wanted both teams to win. You know, I really did, because I followed a little, you know, their one team's journey in Amherst more than Cabrini's, but also getting invested in Cabrini is not hard. So seeing both, you know, one of those teams get kind of devastated by the loss, and then seeing, you know, it happened to Yale too, it really puts in perspective that yes, we always celebrate the winner, and that's what we talked about for the majority of the podcast. But you know, the accomplishment of getting to that game and then, you know, losing is obviously heartbreaking, but it, eventually you'll be able to look back and be like, whoa, this team was really good too. You know, so we do crown a champion, but I think that there were a lot of great teams this year, and that kind of lends to the point of this might have been the best season ever, and definitely the best rule set aside from the BS adjudication of the dive rule.
Yes, and you know, I think that's very well said. To, you know, we've been kind of saying throughout the year there hasn't really been a team that seemed to dominate besides Penn State. There's a lot of great teams, and I think that, you know, Virginia may not have always held that moniker throughout the year, but when you think about the journey that they had, where they found themselves in a lot of holes throughout the season, whether it was at Princeton, whether it was at Syracuse, whether it was against North Carolina in the ACC tournament, or, you know, they were down by 5 to Maryland in the quarterfinals, down by 2 to Duke in the final minute. And throughout the season, they kind of just built up a confidence and a belief that they were never really out of a game. And I know talking to them after the Maryland victory, they all cited that game in the Carrier Dome against Syracuse, where you know, pretty late in that game, Syracuse looked like they were going to take home the victory. And of course, Virginia kind of just came up with some really key plays and won that game. And that always, that kind of just instilled this belief that they were never out of it. And we kind of saw them ride that mentality all the way to a victory. And when I kind of think about, you know, I think about that Maryland Towson game where Towson lost by the finest of margins. And I look back on this Virginia season, and I'm like, wow, you know what, 17, 18 wins, three losses, but you kind of don't think about it that way. You think about all those comebacks. And I was like, wow, this team really did. I mean, obviously they, you know, they were in control for the national championship, but to get to that point, they really did win by some of the finest of margins I've ever seen. And, you know, I kind of think back on that 2011 Virginia team as well, because that was kind of a miraculous run. But, you know, this does kind of feel like a bit of a storytale run from this Virginia Cavalier team to find themselves in all of those holes and make all those dramatic comebacks and achieve a national championship with it. And, you know, I also kind of said this on Twitter as well, but the journey for those Virginia seniors must have been just unbelievable to get recruited. And after your freshman season, have to go through a coaching change. You don't win a conference game in the ACC until your third season in. And your senior season, you win an ACC championship and you win a national championship. That is, you can't write that kind of stuff. That's crazy.
Absolutely agree. And they earned every inch of the trophy, every second they got to spend on the field. You know, great team to watch. And, you know, offense can win championships, guys, but it still needs really, really good defense too.
Kyle, that is our lacrosse talk for today. Let's move on to our Game of Thrones. Well, oh no.
Yeah, we don't have that either.
Dang it.
What are we going to do?
What are we going to do?
What are we going to do for the people, Dan? What are we going to do for the people?
Does life go on after Game of Thrones?
Yeah, it really does. Guys, let it go. Honestly.
Actually, I do want to say something real quick. I've not seen the Game of Thrones documentary that aired in place of Game of Thrones at 9 o'clock on Sunday yet, but I do want to watch it. Apparently there's maybe some telling facial reactions at, you know, table reads and stuff from some of the actors that, may give us some insight into the way that Game of Thrones played out. But, you know, let's kind of just talk about, you know, what we're looking forward to over the summer, whether it's TV shows, movies, anything like that. What do you have for me, Kyle? I feel like you're on top of this more than I am.
Yeah, I think we're going to do show, movie, album. Okay. How do you feel about that? Just one pick. It can either be coming out or it already is out. Because, you know, everyone, you know, with Thrones gone, you need a new show. I'm here for you. I've got a great choice. It has the greatest pilot I have ever seen. I have recommended it before. I'm going to do it again. I repeat, this is the greatest TV show pilot I have ever seen. And the show is a Showtime show, but it's on, or no, sorry, it's a Cinemax show. It is on Amazon Prime. I believe all the seasons are there now. And that show is Banshee. And I'm not even going to tell you what it's about, because I want you to go into the pilot, if you've never heard of it or seen it, totally unspoiled. You're going to sit there watching it being like, what is happening? What is happening? What is happening? And then it's going to hit you in the face at the end with an encounter that also doesn't make any sense, but it slowly unfolds and grows to be this wild, out of control beast of a show that you're like, this, there's no way this is possible in real life. It's almost like a cartoonish universe, especially in terms of violence. So if you don't like violence, you won't like this show. Disclaimer. But it is awesome. I recommend it to everybody who's like, hey, I need a new show. This is my recommendation. I loved it. I've seen it three times all the way through. So check that out. It's called Banshee from Cinemax on Amazon Prime right now.
So my show recommendations, well, I can't recommend it because it's still going on, but you know, I have seen Chernobyl and I'm going to continue to watch that on HBO. Dang it. As soon as I was like, I'm finally ready to cancel HBO, they pull me back in. I'm going to be watching that and I'm going to start watching Barry. So
Barry's really good.
Yeah.
Barry's
really good. I can't really recommend him, but that's the way I'm going. What movie are you excited for, Kyle?
I mean, I don't know if I can get more excited for a movie than I have with Endgame. And so we went to, while we were down in Philly, we kind of went out to dinner as a group on the Sunday night. We went with, one of our, you know, clients there, and, sitting there talking to him and, talking about Avengers Endgame, man. And the guy goes, "Oh, how many times have you seen it?" I'm like, "Ah, twice." He's like, "Three times." And I'm like, "What?" Like, you would never expect like this dude to be like, "I've seen it three times." Like, to like one up you with like weird pop culture stuff. Whoop, you have to bleep that. Sorry. But he did, and he got me. And I was just kind of like, oh, okay. You got me. I'm out pop culture. Good for you. I guess like gun to my head, Hobbs and Shaw. But as we've discussed before on the podcast, you have not seen any Fast and Furious movies. And please, people, at him on Twitter and shame him into watching at least 1, 5, and 7. Please. 1, 5. Those are the necessary order. 1, 5, and 7. You need to watch them.
I don't know. I think the only movie I'm really like, I'm excited for, well, first of all, I can't really get up for a movie the same way I was excited for Endgame as well. So
right.
The summer already kind of feels like it's on a downward trajectory in terms of movie excitement, but I am excited for the Star Wars movie that's going to be coming out in December. But also I think this summer in particular, I'm excited for the Elton John biopic, and I'm excited for that like movie where the guy, like wakes up in a world where the Beatles didn't exist and basically just becomes a superstar in their absence. So,
oh, Yesterday.
Yeah. Yesterday. Yeah. I'm excited for those two movies. I don't
Danny know. Boyle.
Yeah.
Our guy.
Yeah, man. Making zombie movies and now making sentimental Beatles flicks.
He can do anything. He can do anything.
All right, Kyle, album. You listen to music?
I actually, before we started the podcast, I told Dan I finally got actual acceptable headphones. So part of that was I need to listen to more music. And my favorite album that came out, I actually just did a bunch of writing for our PLL capsules that are going up this week. And Rosie is doing the MLL ones. And I just put it on my iTunes and hit shuffle because I'm not about Spotify. I haven't gotten the deal yet to make me move to Spotify. Some crazy stuff went up, but the most recent album I bought is the soundtrack to a movie that I'm probably never going to see, but one of my favorite bands did the soundtrack for it, Biffy Clyro, and it's the soundtrack for the movie Balance Not Symmetry. And the title song is that, and it's awesome. Balance Not Symmetry by Biffy Clyro. Check it out. It's pretty good. It's a good album. It's a little soft at parts, but you know, in general, like their worst stuff is better than a lot of people's bad stuff or best stuff. So, you know, check them out. That's my album. I'm sure there's better stuff coming out. That's the one that I bought, listened to 3 or 4 times through. And I can't remember the last time I did that. So check that out.
Gotcha. I think I don't know if they're coming out with an album or not, but the Black Keys are back after being on hiatus for an indeterminate amount of time. Like, it was weird. They're I almost said their goalie. Why would I say that? Their drummer like broke his arm, and they're just like, all right, well, we're just not going to be a band for a while. And now that they're just back, they are. And I also think Tame Impala is coming out with a new album later this year. So I guess I'm going to be waiting for those to listen to them. Those are cool. My two albums. Kyle, that's our pop culture talk. That was our weird watch. Let's move on to the dive rule debate. And much to our surprise, the dive rule did ruin anybody's national championship.
I mean, not really. It came close. It came close.
I will say this. What about that moment in the Yale-Penn State game where they called a push and they called like a dive at the same time?
Yeah, see, you haven't been watching. What? See, that's the make weight call that they're doing now when the ball doesn't go in, is that they're calling both of those and one team is only up for 30, but they both play 5-on-5, like to make it even, I guess. That's been happening in D2, D3 for like a month. So like the refs got to, I mean, listen, there's a lot more games, a lot more refs. So it's probably part of it, but I think it's also like as well, you brought up, people were going to see it as a bit of a cop out. So I think the D1 refs were a little more hesitant because there's a little more scrutiny there. But if you look at the rule, a lot of incidences are going to add up to both those things, because if you don't penalize the push, then it just incentivizes the defender to push every time and commit a foul every time anyway. So that was the nice kind of I don't know if it's nice. I think it's kind of, again, it's a bit of a cop out, but at least they're calling something and trying to make a move that is better than all or nothing. I think it is better than all or nothing. So I'm just going to put that out there for that. But it's definitely been happening in the latter part of the season at different divisions. But I wasn't surprised, but I do remember everyone in the press box being like, what? Why? No, that's not right. Actually, it is right. It can happen at the same time.
Yeah. Kyle, before we go into our Tucker Dordovic play of the week, I want to do a quick Toronto watch segment. Seeing that the award ceremony is on Thursday night, what do we think? What do we think right now? You notoriously tweeted out after the Yale victory in the semifinals that it was a 3-horse race between Grant Amant, T.D. Erland, and Pat Spencer. Do you still feel that way, or has your mind changed?
I mean, it's not that I don't feel that way. I do feel that way. I think the problem is picking. So I definitely feel like give it to all three of them. You know, like you can't do that.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
I know.
That invalidates your entire life ethos.
I know. That's
give
why
it to none of them.
It's weird. Give it to
I
none
thought that
of
was
them.
More likely.
No, I mean, I think they all deserve like a piece of it. You know, like they all did
what,
their
is this, Mean Girls at the end, where she like breaks up the tiara.
They just did, you know, all three of those guys did so much for the sport, man. I'm sorry. Like, I'm not gonna, it's at the end of the year. So shut up, watch. I watch. So listen, I think it's also, I get hit with like waves of sentimentality when the season ends, because like something needs to power me through for PLL MLL this summer. And I think that sentimentality like boiled over a little bit in some of the stuff I wrote this weekend, but at the same time, like I've learned to trust it. So I do think that all three of them are worthy still. You can't tell me they're not. You can't. I don't buy the face-off troll argument. I don't buy the, you know, Spencer got bounced early in the tournament, and I don't, you know, buy the, you know, Amen didn't get his team to the championship. Get out of here. Get out of my face with those arguments. They're so bad. Like, give me another argument that's better than those three arguments, because those are the only ones I saw on Twitter. That's it. They're like, oh, TD can't get it because he's a face-off guy. Or like, he should get it because he helped his team win. Okay, which one is it? You know, I'm just so sick of the anti-bias against specialist positions, especially when they have the potential to be dominant like he was against Penn State. But I would love to give it to all three. But are you making me pick, or are you pick first? Why don't you pick first?
Well, I think what you're kind of trying to say is that the argument around who should win the Tourton isn't necessarily why they should win, but why players shouldn't win. I guess is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And
yes. I hate that.
It's like that's really the kind of the narrative that's played out, where it's like, oh, Spencer, like, didn't get to the Final Four. Grant Amant didn't win the national championship. And now T.D. Erland, like, didn't win the national championship.
Yeah. And if you're a person that argues like that, I'm going to be the first to tell you, you suck at arguing. You're terrible at it. Try to be better. Like, work harder. Don't be basic going on Twitter being like, he shouldn't get it because literally every other person has said that. It's not a good, A, it's not a good enough answer. B, it's not original. So figure it out. Like, the level of unoriginal takes all weekend was blowing my mind, blowing it out of the back of my skull. Couldn't believe it. But then I was like, wait, across Twitter though. All right, it's fine.
You know, I'm going to make my pick, and I do think that Pat Spencer is going to win the Tourton. And I think a lot of it is for reasons that might not make sense. And I think it's just because he's a senior, he's accomplished more, and that, you know, is going over two guys who, for their respective positions, had record-breaking seasons. You know, Grant Amant, most assists by any player ever in a single season. And then T.D. Yedlin, I don't know if he surpassed his record from last year, but he was far and away the best Fogo in the country with an absurd winning percentage. So I just kind of think that, you know, kind of like Matt Rambo, with the only difference being that Rambo won the national championship, and that overall career is going to play into this, and I think they're going to award it to Pat Spencer.
I think the same for similar reasons, but the most important one for me being that Ament and TD get another shot next year. And well, yeah, the fact that
that's it.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he is a senior, that Spencer is a senior, obviously.
As opposed to them being juniors. Yes.
Right. It's, I don't know what the tour ton is. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it best player in the season? Cause I think we've seen that it isn't sometimes. Is it the player that gets the farthest? Maybe we've seen that sometimes too. Is it the sentimental favorite? Sometimes. Yeah. So there's really no consistency in how the award is given. I think the one tiebreaker they have used in the past more than others is how far the player gets, but usually that's a one versus two, not a one versus two and three. And I think because there's such a logjam and maybe this guy will get more votes than this guy or take votes away from this guy, that ends up being Spencer as the guy who is going to win at the end of the day.
Yeah. All right, Kyle, our final segment, the Tucker Dordovic play of the week. I have a great candidate from the national championship game. Do you have any?
Yeah, we already talked about it. The low to high to tie the game is from Laviano is one of the greatest pressure shots and the best low to high clutch shot I've ever seen in my life. So that's my nomination.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it was a really important play when we look at how the national championship game unfolded, but it was Ryan Conrad's calls turnover on TD Erland. He picks up the GB with one hand, dodges two trail checks, goes straight to the crease and scores sidearm low and away. And I'm like, that is one of the most incredible individual efforts I've seen all season. One of the best plays of the season. I might even dare to say the best play of the tournament. No, yeah, it wasn't clutch or as important as Ian Laviano's low to high, but I was like, wow, that is just a player who is so good at what he does best. And he just absolutely flexed on him in that moment.
Yeah. There was that other play that happened in the championship game. I'm trying to look at who it was off the top of my head. It was Dave Smith from Virginia picking up the ball on the crease in a scrum, and he ducks under a flying check.
Yes. I remember that.
And carries the ball out. I was like, wait, what just happened? There's no, and the commentators were like stunned almost. They didn't even like really say too much as it happened. But I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. That's the craziest like defensive ground ball to offense I've ever seen. It was unbelievable.
Just didn't he like almost like reverse suplex the guy where like he like lifted him up as he was like going over him or something?
Yeah,
like
I think if you go the slow-mo version of that play is he clips the end of the heels and I don't care. It was still amazing. So it's interesting. So all these plays are Virginia plays. And it's funny that we're, you know, people are still kind of shocked that Virginia won, right? I think a lot of, especially the haters, shout to Cuse and Hop people and Maryland people. Shout to you guys. Thank you for making this podcast possible because I know you hate listening to it and I love you for it. I just want you to know I love you. So we look at all these plays and they're incredible, but they're also risky and ballsy and audacious at the same time. And we shouldn't be surprised when you put all those plays together that our national champion in the sport of Division I lacrosse is Virginia. We should all be proud of this team. And no matter who you support, you got to give it up for the playmaking ability of the Cavs, man. Unreal.
Yeah. Dang, Kyle. That is our show. That is our season.
Season finale.
Dang.
Dan, are you going to tell him I'm about to get on my horse and go live above the wall or not? Do you want me to tell him that? Or
you can do that.
It's not going to happen.
The music is playing like,
yeah,
bum, 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 bum. And you're just like, you're sentimental about it, but you know, Tormund's by your side.
Yeah.
And you're going to the north to the land of pro lacrosse. And I'm like Arya Stark, like just going
Rosie
on that
is my
boat.
Tormund.
Wow, that sounds like a great Photoshop waiting to happen.
Can someone do that, please? So we can use it as the bumper for our podcast this summer. Yeah, wait, Dan, does that make you Bran? Or are you just like Arya lost on a sea somewhere? Like, what's going on?
I think time will tell.
Wow.
Wow. Stay tuned for the spinoff, Kyle.
A zinger from Dan Aber to end the 2019 season of In the Crease. I can't think of a better way to finish it all off. Thank you all for listening. If you want to stay up to date with all the stuff we're doing, we all have a ton of different projects that we are working on. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at @TheKyleDevitt. Dan, tell the people how much we love them and give them your info.
Yeah, you can find me at @Dan_Abern on Twitter. Guys, we have appreciated the listen. We love In the Crease Nation. We appreciate every single person who listened, chimed in on Twitter, anything like that. It definitely helped make the season a little bit more special. So thanks, guys. Peace.